again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinavelis, and what a show we have for you this week. St. John's is partying like it's 1999, and at the same time, they're doing things like it's 1985. Yeah, we're going back 40 years, and St. John's fans are coming out in droves from all corners of New York City. They want to support their Johnnies. Another sellout crowd at the Garden saw St. John's move one step closer to their first Big East regular season title since 1992. And with another win or two, they can wrap up their first outright regular season Big East title since when? 1985. Yeah, and on the other end of that spectrum, UConn is not looking like a team ready to challenge for a three-peat. But don't count out the defending champs just yet. Rutgers, meanwhile, may be down, but Dylan Harper says they're far from out. Plus, Yale wraps up the top spot in the Ivy League. No one book it. No one is taking down the Bulldogs this year in the Ivy League. And over in the MAC, Quinnipiac keeps pace with Marist as Amari Monroe, if you don't know the name, you should, he is looking like your MAC player of the year. I'll get to all of that in just a bit. Plus, my guest this week is the head coach of Division III Drew University. We're going to Madison, New Jersey. Michael McSloy, a guy from Long Island, has done something at Drew that no one has ever done in the history of the landmark conference in men's basketball. I'll tell you more about that in my interview with Michael McSloy in just a bit. But first, I want to thank my sponsor of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth and Ocean Counties, give Mike a call at 201-988-2577 and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So for the second week in a row, we dip into the D3 ranks. And why not? This isn't the Tri-State Division I College Basketball Podcast. It's the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. D1, D2, D3, D8. It doesn't matter, okay? We don't discriminate. Men's, women's, doesn't matter. We're doing our best to highlight the best teams, the best players, the best coaches, and the best stories in the great Tri-State of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And what a story we have going on at Drew University in Madison, New Jersey. The men's basketball team just became the first team ever to go undefeated in the landmark conference regular season. First team ever, a perfect 18-0 in conference play. And with me now is the head coach of the Rangers, Michael McSloy. Michael, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate you having me on.
What a story it is, Michael. And I know this chapter has yet to be written, okay? I understand that. You're getting ready for conference tournament. You're the number one seed. But, Michael, what you have just accomplished, what is your reaction to what you've just done? 18-0 in conference play.
Yeah, it's special. I mean, it's testament to our guys. You know, they show up every single day. They work extremely hard. I don't have to pry them to get into the gym and work on their game. They're a really unselfish group. They've bought into our system. So it's really a testament to them and what they've accomplished. To go 18-0 in the regular season, I think is especially impressive because that means you didn't have a regular season game where you just, you know, came out flat and didn't, you know, perform. They showed up every game. And, you know, some games are obviously better than others, but they were able to emotionally charge themselves up to play every single regular season game, which I think is, again, a credit to them.
Hey, you guys were not even predicted number one in the conference preseason rankings. You had a great season last year. I think you finished second in the conference last year to Catholic. Susquehanna was the team that won it all last year in the Landmark in the conference tournament. So they were preseason number one. Catholic was number two. You were number three. You beat them all. So tell me how it came together, and how this group has really gelled over this course of time so far.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of older guys. I would say that number one is, in as everybody knows in college basketball nowadays, the older you are, the better chance you have to be successful. So we have six seniors, five of whom play significant minutes for us, and one of whom, Malcolm Newman, was out last year, actually really for the last 2 years with a knee injury. He was an all-conference player in 2021, 2022. So he comes back now for his last year. And I think, we were just able to get a little bit older, a little bit more athletic than we were last year. And it's kind of propelled us to have, a good season so far.
Hey, five players in double figures, coach. That's rare too, right?
It is. It's, again, it, with how we play with the pressing style and the up-tempo offense, it's important for us to be able to play a lot of players and to be able to play them significant minutes. So I think there was a stat, and don't quote me on this, but it was like through 12 games or so, and I think we had nine guys either lead us in scoring or share the lead in scoring in any particular game. So again, it's just a testament to their work ethic, to the depth of our team, that they were able to accomplish that.
And their unselfishness, right? Because it's not like you have a guy out there that's averaging 18. I believe the highest guy, I forget, maybe 14 under 15 points a game, right?
Yeah, Josh Kalina, the guy, is our leading scorer. He averages probably just under 15 points per game. But again, five guys who are averaging double figures, and then some other guys who are in that 7-8 range who, have led us in scoring on any, get on any given night and have, made some serious contributions as well.
You are the number one scoring team in the Landmark Conference. Average more than 90 points a game. I didn't look at the national, rankings, but I'm sure that that's got to be top 10. I would think top five in the nation. So you like to get up and down. So you said it. The way you play, you better be conditioned. And how about this style that you have infused into Drew in just a few years?
Yeah, the style, I think, we went back after my first year. So this is now my third year here, Drew. We went back after my first year to try to look back at some historic trends in the conference. And one that stood out to us was Moravian in that 2018 to 2020 range, when Justin Potts, who's now at Montclair, was the head coach there,
Yeah.
sort of how they played. And I thought a couple of things matched up to us, was that number one, they weren't overly big. They weren't like 6'7", 6'8" in the front line. They were more like 6'5", 6'6". They were athletic. They had a lot of shooting. And I thought with how recruiting was going and who we had coming back going into last year, that we could start to, try to implement that system. And, we did it last year, and, we had some good success with it. And I think it's just kind of carried over into this year. The guys are a little bit more seasoned with it. I'm a little bit more seasoned coaching it. I still have so much to learn as to the nuances of the press, but I think it gives us a little bit of an advantage going into games. And I also think for our players and for recruits, it's an exciting style, right? Like our last game, we took 41 threes. I mean, what perimeter player wouldn't want to, run up and down and shoot a bunch of threes without too many restrictions?
Hey, at some point, you're right. You're right. And in this day and age, I mean, that's where it is, right? I mean, the people want to score. You don't see too many teams buying in defensively, but at the same time, it's not like you're the worst defensive team in the conference. I believe you're, fifth or sixth in conference in defense. So at some point, you got to get stops, coach. You have to stop the other team. How confident are you in your defense?
Yeah, I think, when you look at, deeper into the analytics of points per possession, I've been most impressed with the improvements we made defensively from last year into this year. We're going to give up more points than your average team because there's more possessions in the game. The rate of the game is going significantly, is at a significantly higher rate than your average I guess, more traditional play style. So there are metrics that we're trying to limit from the other team, and it's something that is challenging, right? Because it requires a lot of energy and a lot of commitment from the guys. But when they're locked in and bought into the defensive side of things, it really propels the rest of our game.
So what happens when a team tried to, take the air out of the ball, limit the possessions that you have, and how have you adapted to that?
Yeah, so that's obviously a challenge, right? Is if a team is, trying to play slower and limit the possessions and, maybe play some zone defense, which some teams have done. And that's where we talk to the guys about, you want to be able to win in more than one way, right? It's nice when we score 100 points and win and the other team scores 86, but if winning means we win 68 to 65, who cares, right? Like whatever it takes to get the job done. So I think, ideally we play at a faster rate and a higher pace, more up tempo type of game. But if it means we have to, the other team forces us to slow us down a little bit, I think we're built for that this year too.
So you, this is your third year. You won 20 games last year. You followed that up another 20-win season. How are you handling the success at a young time in your tenure here, coach?
I think I'm handling it fine. I mean, the way kind of I'm wired is, it's kind of on to the next thing. I am trying to be better at, enjoying the moment and recognizing that going 18 and 0 in a regular season has not been done before in our conference. And, I have taken a little time to, not much time, but a little time to enjoy that and reflect on it a little bit. But, I think perspective is important and just realizing that going 18 and 0 in the regular season was not necessarily the goal of the team. Our goal was to win a landmark championship. So it's been able to keep us grounded at this time.
Yeah, last the team, this program has really, really good recent history, right? The coach before you took the team to their first landmark conference title, I believe in 2021, set the program record for 23 wins. You're currently at 22 wins. So, it's not like he handed you a program that was down, but you have not only maintained it and tried to surpass that. So you're closing in on some pretty good areas here, coach. Hopefully getting a title and maybe even breaking the school record here for wins.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. And it's something that I think we're very outward spoken about is that we know we didn't inherit necessarily this complete rebuild, right? I mean, Coach Keckler, who's now at Moravian, did an amazing job building up this program. And it was sort of, what I said when I was interviewed for the job. It's, I just want to hopefully keep the program moving in the direction that, it was going in before I got here. And, maybe we can, add another layer to it, which, the one pro thing is the program has never been to the NCAA tournament. And that would be a really cool feat for Drew to accomplish.
Yeah, listen, I hope you get there. So you get the automatic bid winning this conference?
Yeah, if you win the conference, you get an AQ. Yeah, you
Right.
don't qualifier.
So that's got to be the goal. Two wins from there, coach. As well as I do, the pressure's on. You are the team that everyone's going after. You're the number one seed. The good news is you got a couple days off. You get a bye, the top two seeds into the semifinals. So I'm sure you'll be watching that 4-5 matchup very closely.
Yeah, well, I think we'll probably have our staff and whoever of the guys want to come and watch it. We have practice before it on Tuesday, so afterwards we'll get some dinner and throw it on the TV and get to preparing for the next opponent.
Oddly enough, Moravian could be the Keckler, the coach that you replaced here, is the 5 seed, and Susquehanna. Give me a little preview of both teams there.
Yeah, I think both teams are number one, they're very good. I think Moravian, since Coach Keckler's gotten there, has steadily improved. I think they're at 16-9 this year, which is a long cry from when he first took over. They have a tremendous guard in Chad Kratzer, capable of scoring 30 points on any given night. And they probably have one of the best big guys in the conference, Marcus Radcliffe. I think he was first team all conference last year as a sophomore. very dynamic, can make threes, at 6'7", can score inside. So they have a lot of firepower. And then Susquehanna is built on a lot of experience. They went to the championship game last year. They returned every single player from that team, a team who knocked us out in the semifinals in our gym last year. So there's somebody who's, probably sitting there preparing for tomorrow's game and, saying to themselves, like, we've been here before, because they have. And so no matter who we face, it'll be a very challenging game, to say the least.
How about the way you guys take care of the ball as well? I almost forgot that. Not only are you scoring at a high rate, but number one in assist to turnover. You get it in a high, back and forth game, up and down. There could be a lot of turnovers, but how about the way you guys take care of the ball?
Yeah, we're more concerned about the turnover margin, I think, is, we're trying to hopefully force teams into a higher rate of turnovers than we are. It's funny you mentioned that, because I'm so accustomed to still thinking back to the early part of the season when we're, in the early stages of October, November, December, and I think we were turning the ball over at a higher rate then. So I think that's still lingering in my mind, that we got to do a better job of taking care of the ball. But it's good to see that the guys have adjusted as the season has gone on. It's important, right? Like, when you're playing a fast tempo, high octane offense, you can't get caught up in this turnover back and forth battle. You're trying to force them to a lot of turnovers, and you're trying to, really take care of the ball, to enable us to get a lot of shots and a lot of threes.
Yeah, I'm sure any coach will tell you, that's probably the number one factor in any game, right? Taking care of the ball, holding on to it, and forcing turnovers. You can win a lot of games if you're plus in that category, no short for doubt, no doubt about it. So how does a guy from Long Island, who has made number of stops throughout the state of New York, Connecticut College, Vassar, St. Joe's University in Long Island before here, how do you end up navigating yourself, a boy from Kings Park, Long Island, to Madison, New Jersey?
It's funny. I the short answer is I don't really know how it all happened. I mean, when I first got into coaching in my 20s, the part of the job, I think, is moving frequently, and looking for that next opportunity to grow and to learn, right? I mean, I was very fortunate wherever I've been: Connecticut College, Vassar, Gettysburg, NYU, to have, tremendous head coaches to learn from. And I think I took advantage of those opportunities by, not shying away from uprooting myself and moving to a new school to try to learn from a new coach, how to recruit at a new place. And then I was really fortunate to get my first head coaching job at St. Joe's University on Long Island, which was home for me. And, in an ideal world, it probably would have been a little bit longer than 3 years, but we had a really good season my third year there, and then the job opened here at Drew, and I put my name in the hat, honestly not thinking that I would get it. And the process moved pretty quickly, and I came here for my on-campus interview, fell in love with the place, fell in love with the surrounding area, and I'm very happy that A, I was able to land the job, and B, that I've been here now for 3 years.
Yeah, awesome. So where do you like recruiting more? New Jersey, Long Island? Do you go back to your roots?
You're gonna get me in trouble. Okay, so I will say, we've been able to still grab some New York guys, I think, because of my connections to, Long Island and New York City. New Jersey basketball, it's hard to beat. I mean, the level of talent in the state is just incredible. I do wish that, they would find a way to inherit the shot clock, because sometimes when you drive 2 hours and you're watching this high level game, and all of a sudden with 5 minutes left, they stop playing, they're holding the ball. And I get it, because you want to win the game. That can be a little frustrating, I guess, at times. But yeah, I mean, I would say I'm split 50-50 on, I'm going to always go back to home to recruit, and, try to recruit New York City guys and Long Island guys. And then you can't not recruit New Jersey, because, again, there's so many good players here, so many good high school programs, so many good AAU programs to recruit from. There's a lot of talent in our backyard here.
And that's a beautiful campus. That area, Madison, you're right next to Morristown. Morris County is, you can do a lot worse than that campus and that surrounding area, Coach.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you know, Madison, Morristown. I mean, it's Chatham, Floam Park. Like there's, like you said, there's so many good, nice, quaint towns around here that it makes recruiting pretty attractive, I think, for potential players.
Now, I want to ask you something about recruiting here, Coach. You know, Drew isn't exactly a cheap university. It's one of the most expensive, you know, university schools to go to. So does that factor into, you know, and there are no scholarships per se in Division III. So are you recruiting a different demographic of college of, you know, high school basketball player?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think the thing that will get sometimes maybe distracting for recruits or what jumps out at them is how much it will cost, right? The ticket price of Drew University. And we really try to build that relationship early on in the process and really try to encourage them to go through the process and see how much financial aid they get, how much academic money they get. And I always tell them, like, if this is something that you can even remotely see yourself, you know, being at Drew, then go through the process and see where it takes you, but don't close the door until it needs to be closed. And that is sort of worked for us. We really haven't had too many guys, if any, walk away from, you know, coming to Drew because of finances. It's been more that they just found a better fit elsewhere for themselves.
No, that's excellent. You know, I don't usually take these conversations in that area, but let's face it, right? You're not giving out full rides. You know the ticket price. Do you know the average cost of tuition or the average tuition, you know, room and board, everything that your team pays?
I don't know what the average will be. I know it varies depending on, you know, where they the circumstances in which they come from. But I don't know the average.
Okay. Interesting. No, I thought I'd just ask that. But you know, you're up against, you know, a school that, you know, a state school, let's say, that you know, is only 32,000. So, are you able to you know, make it attractive enough for them, you know, and compete with something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think part of the other challenge too is a lot of the state schools also have really good basketball programs, like a Montclair, Rowan, Ramapo, TCNJ. I mean, Stockton, the list sort of Ramapo. I mean, the list goes on, right?
Yeah.
So, not only are you competing in terms of from an academic status standpoint, but from a financial standpoint. And then, oh, by the way, that NJAC is arguably one of the best conferences in all of Division III. So it's definitely an uphill battle at times.
Well, I think you figured it out, Coach. Just fine. You've built this program. You know, as you said, you've taken the baton from Coach Keckler. Another 20-win season. 11-0 at home, 18-0 in conference play. You will host, should you get to the championship game, the
Yeah.
final.
Yeah, sure. Should we get there, we will host, yes.
All right. Well, I know it's one game at a time, but win the next two, and you're in. Hope you get there. We'll be pulling for the Drew Rangers, and you know, continued success this year. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us and you know, for all that you do for covering, you know, college sports.
All right. Go Rangers.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks to Michael. What a job he's doing in just his third year at Drew University. They are the heavy favorites in the Landmark Conference. But you know, look, in a conference like that, you'd better win your league championship tournament. Because if you don't, that is a one-bid league. It's not going to be easy. They're going to have to get through either Moravian or Susquehanna and then likely Catholic in the championship game. But the good news is, if they win, as long as they win the semifinals, Drew will be at home where they are undefeated all year long. All right, let's moving on up to Division One. And the story of the year, by far in the tri-state, really, it's one of the great stories in all of college basketball. You know, Duke gets all the headlines, but look, the more St. John's wins, the more attention they are getting at the Garden. And Rick Pitino is a national story. What he is doing in year two at St. John's is just like he's done in any other program from Boston University to Providence to Kentucky to Louisville to Iona. He gets results in year two. And this team, you know, we've been saying all along, if they could only shoot threes, if they could only shoot free throws, well, guess what? La-di-da, la-di-freaking-da-da-da. Because they got it all together in the game against UConn. They sweep the UConn Huskies in front of 19,800 fans at the Garden on Sunday, sweep them for the first time in 25 years. And lo and behold, they shot it from three. They were over 40% for the second straight game, 42%. They've done that only four times this year where they've shot over 40%, and they've done it two games in a row now. And they shot 78% from the free throw line. If they do all of that, if they shoot like this and defend the way they defend, this is the first time I'm saying this. This team has Final Four potential. Why not? Why? Now, listen, they haven't proven that they can do that on a consistent basis all year, all right? Because they could certainly go back to their, you know, 30% ways from three. And if this team continues on this pace, I believe, don't quote me, but I believe they would be the worst three-point shooting team or one of them to get to the Final Four. And look, it's got to be driving Rick Pitino crazy. The first year of the three-point shot in college basketball was 1987, where it was everybody used the same three-point line, right? And back then it was top of the key. It was 19 feet 8 inches. Now it's like 22 feet, whatever it is. But my point is this: Providence was the team, along with teams like Loyola Marymount, where they were, and UNLV, they were shooting threes like crazy. And Providence was coached by who in 1987? Rick Pitino. So Rick Pitino knew right away when the three-point line came into play how important a weapon it was. Providence, great three-point shooting team. When he went to Kentucky, great three-point shooting teams. When he went to Louisville, for the most part, very good three-point shooting teams. But even on his worst three-point shooting teams at Louisville, they found a way to win a national championship in 2013. This team has that look of that 2013 team, right? With that dynamic backcourt of Peyton Siva and Russ Smith. What does St. John's have now? A dynamic backcourt, a three-headed monster backcourt with Davon Smith, Kadari Richmond, and Sim Wilcher. This team defends like that Louisville team. They might defend better. They are the second best. They've been the second best rated KenPom team at defensive efficiency all year long. All right. They're ranked second in the country at defensive efficiency behind only Tennessee. And Houston is right behind them. And after the game, I asked Dan Hurley about St. John's defense. He's seen them twice this year. And here's what he had to say.
I just think it's the positionless switching that they're able to do on ball, off ball, the veer switching. And then, like, what makes it obviously work is just having all these, like, big wings that are grown men physiques. I mean, these guys are physical. And then Ejiofor. I mean, you know, Ejiofor gets onto guards, and it's hard to take advantage of that because he's like, his movement and his ability to stay on the ball. Yeah, they remind me of Houston with just what they do to you defensively and on the glass.
Yeah, this team is committed to defense. So when they defend, and they did it again, they held UConn to 39% from the floor, okay? When they defend like that, and now they're shooting threes, and now they have all five guys in double figures, and they're getting blocks and they're getting steals. Look out, okay? But what is concerning is that once again, Rick Pitino brings up the injury bug. And it's like the little boy who cried wolf, right? You're not going to believe him. He said Davon Smith might be out for the season. Davon Smith plays, right? I don't know if he said it, but that was out there that Davon Smith could be out for the season. We didn't think that RJ Lewis was going to be healthy enough to play, and he played. So we've heard this before from Rick Pitino, and now, unsolicited, following the game, and I'm sure you heard about this, what you're going to hear is all of Pitino's comments. There were four separate times during the press conference that Pitino brought up or was asked about the health of Kadari Richmond. And these are all of his comments put together.
Kadari, I'll say this, he was going to come with us right now, but he's being seen by the doctors. I didn't know what the hell they were yelling at Seton Hall about general soreness. I had no idea what they were yelling back then. Kadari Richmond is more injured than any player I've coached right now, and he fights through it. He's got double groin pulls. He's got problems all over his anatomy, and he played the game and played hard. So I don't know about anything except he killed it. And he needs time off as much as we can give him right now because he's really hurting. All I can tell you is he was really hurting and playing. Every part of his body's hurting right now. Most 99% of the players would not have played tonight. And I don't say that just to geek him up. They would not have played. He's really, really hurting. I am a little concerned about Kadari right now. I am concerned about him. We may have to sit him out and just give him a lot of rest to prepare for the season. If necessary, we're going to do that.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Yes.
Whatever you tell us about Kadari is going to be the opposite.
I'm being very, very straight honest, 100%. He should not have played tonight, and we got some problems because he's hurting big time. So I'm not, with Davon, I told you guys the truth. Trainer said he can't play, shut him down. The other doctor says shut him down. He comes to me and says, I want to play. So I don't know. But I know right now he wanted to come to the press conference and couldn't even make it here. So I'm not embellishing this at all.
Kadari Richmond is playing, okay? Now, if he is sore, could he take the game off against Butler and even Seton Hall? All right, St. John's has three games left. If Kadari is that sore and it's a groin, that's very tricky. Sit him. Then sit him against Butler. Give him some more rest. And then if he's not well against Seton Hall, sit him. But I'm going to say this. After the game, I saw Kadari walk right by me towards the tunnel. And this was 25 minutes after the game ended. I didn't see a limp. I didn't see somebody who was, in a boot or on crutches. I didn't see any soreness, general or acute, whatsoever. He looked fine. Kadari Richmond is going to play against Butler. Okay, book it. The Johnnies are the prohibitive favorites to win the Big East tournament in 2.5 weeks. They have reclaimed the Garden as their own. It doesn't matter how many fans UConn brings to the Garden. UConn is not a good matchup, or St. John's is not a good matchup for UConn. All right. So if St. John's gets UConn in the four, really, to me, the only threat for St. John's is Creighton. That's a team that is not intimidated by the Garden environment. They proved that a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. And with an enforcer like Ryan Kalkbrenner, a game changer, and a first team caliber all Big East player in Stephen Ashworth, you've got the makings of a team that could challenge St. John's. To me, St. John's is number one. Creighton is number two. Those are the two teams with the best chances to win the Big East tournament. And St. John's has established itself as the team to beat. They're closing in on history. I'm sure you've heard about this. They have 15 Big East wins this year. The only other St. John's team in the history of the Big East is that 1985 team that went 15-1. This team is 15-2. Obviously, back then they played 16 games. But this team is 15-2. They have 3 games left to break that record of 15 wins. And they have 1 home game left to finish the year undefeated at home at 18-0. That's how good this team is. And right now, they're off that 4 line in most projections, and they're trending as a 3 seed. Win the Big East regular season and the tournament, I don't see them getting a 1 seed, but they could go as high as a 2 seed. But that's where they want to be, especially if they're in the East. Stay off that 1-4 line and get a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. And Rick Pitino was asked about that. He was asked about, you know, playing in March. And he clearly said it's all about matchups. You know, could this team be a Final Four team like his Louisville team in 2013 that won it all? And here's what he had to say about matchups.
I thought we played our best game of the season. But when you get into the Big East tournament and you get into the NCAA tournament, it becomes all matchups, all styles. You got to change a lot going into the tournament because the film work is so extensive. So you got to make your tweaks in your offense, tweaks in your defense, but it's all matchups. And you hope for good matchups. We hope we get a great seed. We hope we finish this thing out.
There's a guy that brings it defensively. He's one of the great college basketball developers of talent and X's and O's guys and defensive minds. He's the complete package. He's one of the greatest coaches in college basketball history. And you know I've said that before. I put him top 5 in all the coaches that I've seen really since I go back to Bird and Magic 1979. That's my first memory of college basketball when I was 9 years old. I never saw John Wooden coach. I've seen Rick Pitino and Jim Calhoun and Mike Krzyzewski and Dean Smith and Roy Williams and all the rest and Bobby Knight, Denny Crum, whoever you want to throw in there. He's top 5. All right, that's St. John's. Where does that leave UConn? Well, that leaves Dan Hurley saying, for the first time in 2 years, I don't have the best team. All right, Marquette had it 2 years ago, but his team won the national championship. He had it last year in the regular season and in the postseason. They won a national championship. Well, at best, they're the 3rd best team in the Big East, at best. They're probably 3rd or 4th, but they have some work to do because UConn is 18-9, 10-6 in the conference. Here are my thoughts on where they're at. I don't know if they have a first-team player on this team. You can make a case for Liam McNeely. You can make a case for Solo Ball, and you could have made a case for Alex Caravan, although he's still, if there's one player on this team that might get first team all Big East, it might be Alex Caravan. But I'm telling you, his 3-point shot is not there. He hasn't had that shot. I mean, you might have to go back to that Villanova game where he missed the free throws that would have tied or given them the lead at Villanova. And instead, they lost that game. He really hasn't been right since, you know, maybe a little after that, the middle of January, for 1 month. I mean, I saw Alex Caravan. He was fumbling the ball. He couldn't catch the ball. He had 5 turnovers in this game. And none of them, they were all unforced turnovers. All of them. I mean, catching the ball, dribbling, fundamentals. His 3-point shot isn't there. I think he ended up with 17 points. But, you know, he made those things happen with hustle plays. He got to the hoop. Those were all inside. Those were not from distance. He did it two long threes in the second half, and I get that. But there were some key plays in his game where UConn had a 20-point deficit, and they were making a run in the second half. And I'm not blaming it all on Caravan, but he was involved in both plays. One of them, they were down nine with a chance to cut it to seven. And the pass came in and wasn't a great entry pass, but it was off his hands a little bit. He should have been able to, at minimum, corral it and go to work in the low post. It was not a great entry pass. I get that. But the ball went out of his, he had to reach for it. The ball went out of his hands, out of bounds. And St. John's scored. And instead of UConn going down seven, the lead was back up to 11. And then later, they're down 11, and Caravan comes down 5-on-5. And instead of working for a shot, he just pulls up from 30. Poor shot. St. John's gets the rebound. Here they come down on a fast break. I forget who it was. They miss the shot. Here comes Zubi, follow slam down the lane, and one. The Johnnies fans erupt, the bench erupts. And now St. John's goes up 13, makes the free throw. They're up 14. Game over. UConn had a chance to go down 11 to 9 or 8, right? They could have trimmed it to 9 or 8. Instead, St. John's goes up 14. As my coach Joe Riley used to say, that's 3 points we didn't get. That's 3 points they got. That's a 6-point play. Game over. So this team, there's something wrong. The chemistry, the toughness, the grittiness. It was too late before they turned on the full court pressure. You know, you're not coming down, back from 21 down in that building with that crowd against St. John's. Not this year. The way this team was made up, here's the major problem. You don't have an All-American point guard, and you don't have an All-American caliber center who changes the game on both ends of the floor. You're missing your point guard. Hassan Diarra is a fine point guard. He's not Tristan Newton. Terrace Reed is a fine college basketball center and had a good game. He's not Donovan Clingan. He cannot, both of those players, Newton and Clingan, took over games, dominated games, took over Final Fours. There's no player like that on this team. Maybe Liam McNeely. Maybe. But again, he doesn't have the toughness. There's no one with that toughness, that grittiness anywhere on this roster. That's what's missing. Can they find it and make a run and win a game or two in the NCAA tournament? Sure, but UConn fans, you're going to have to come to grips. This team is not going to three-peat. This team is not going back to the Final Four. Okay? Now let's talk Rutgers. For two games, this team took care of business, okay? Granted, it was at Washington. You needed overtime, and it was at home against USC. All right, a team that was more than willing to try to get into a shootout with you, and you had more weapons than they do. All right, you Rutgers did not beat Michigan State or Michigan or Wisconsin, right? But for a team that desperately needed wins, for a team that desperately needed to find its way, get healthy, and maybe get right by the Big Ten tournament, these must wins were very impressive. And for his efforts, Dylan Harper was named National Naismith Player of the Week. All right, that's how good Dylan Harper was. We saw how good Rutgers can be when Dylan Harper is healthy and at the top of his game. with all due respect to Ace Bailey, and Ace Bailey is brilliant, and Ace Bailey will be an elite, a very good NBA player. But for my money, the best player on this team, and maybe the player that I would take ahead of Ace Bailey next year in the NBA, is Dylan Harper. He averaged 29.5 points, 6 assists, 4 steals, and 3.5 rebounds last week. He almost had 25-10 against USC. 25 points, 9 assists, 6 steals. And this after he scored 34 against Washington in overtime. Dylan Harper, at the top of his game, can take Rutgers to places that they need him to take them, right? But it takes more than him, like we've said, and there was more. Ace Bailey played really well. Zach Martini gave a huge lift with 5 points and 5 rebounds. But how about the play of Bryce Dortch? What a story, all right? In a season when, you know, Rutgers fans want to fire Steve Peichel, when Rutgers fans, and I get it, this was supposed to be the year, and the team has underachieved vastly. Peichel has not done a great job coaching. I'll give him credit here. There are 3 freshmen on this roster, not named Harper and Bailey, that have a bright future. And these are guys that Steve Peichel is used to getting. I'm talking about Lathan Somerville. I'm talking about Dylan Grant. And add Bryce Dortch to that mix. Bryce Dortch was going to redshirt this year. He was buried. He was on the scout team. Okay? Buried behind Emmanuel Ogboile and Lathan Somerville. And he was resigned to the fact that he was going to redshirt. And then at some point, Emmanuel Ogboile goes down with what appeared to be a season-ending injury. And now apparently it's not, because he got into this game, which was a huge surprise. But Ogboile was thought to be gone for the season. And Bryce Dortch went to his mom and said, "I don't want a red shirt. I think I can help this team." So after a family discussion, he went to Steve Peichel and said, "I can help this team. I can give you whatever you need. Hustle plays, rebounds, defense, whatever you need." So here's a guy who burned his redshirt year, and he has come alive. And for about the first 6 games, you really just saw a talented looking, you know, 6'9" guy running around and not really knowing what to do. He had 2 points in his first 6 or 7 games. And then, boom, he came alive, and his coming of age game, his welcome to college moment against USC. 14 minutes, 9 points, 2 blocks, and an emphatic follow slam in the second half when this game was still not decided. He comes down, follows up a miss, jams it home, blows off the roof at Jersey Mike's, and it was one of the biggest plays of the game. And it went to Bryce Dortch. And he came into the interview afterward and spoke like a seasoned veteran. Bryce Dortch had his welcome to Rutgers moment. So good for him and those 3 players. And he said it afterward, like, "We're not going anywhere." He is committed, Somerville is committed, and Dylan Grant are committed. Now, will they change their minds in another month? Could they? Could one of them leave? Maybe. But right now, they seem like the 3 Musketeers. All for one and one for all. And that's a nucleus you can build around. Lathan Somerville, Dylan Grant, Bryce Dortch. That has potential in 2 years to be a forceful Big Ten front court. You know, you find a point guard and a couple of wings, and that could be a top half, top six, top five Big Ten team if they keep it together. So, Rutgers fans, I know this year is painful. I know it sucks. It's still not over yet. They will be there are games at home, all right? Minnesota at home. The next two games on the road are going to be awfully tough to win one, yet alone two, at Michigan and at Purdue. But get into the tournament, get healthy, maybe make a run, maybe make a noise, maybe make a miraculous run to the semifinals where they've never been before. See what happens. But don't give up on Pikel. Don't give up on the future. If you retain those three, you've really got a nucleus to build on for the next 2 to 3 years. All right? So there's hope. Maybe not this year, but there is hope. All right, before we go, I do want to get to the Ivy League and the MAC. And here's what I'll say about the Ivy League. Congratulations to Yale as they wrap up the regular season title under James Jones. This team is by far, as you know, the best team in the Ivy League. They are undefeated. They may continue at this pace and go. They've handled everybody. Now, there are still some, you know, some potholes ahead, but they clinched the title with an impressive win over Columbia. And for his efforts, Bez Mbang was named Ivy League Player of the Week, and he did some really impressive things, all right? If you've listened to this podcast, you know that Mbang is going to become the first three-time Defensive Player of the Year ever in the Ivy League, but he is making a strong case for first-team All-Ivy League along with John Pulakidas, and he is making a case, making a case. I don't know if he's going to get it. I think Pulakidas is still the man, but he's making a case for Ivy League Player of the Year. All right, he became the first. He had another triple-double against Columbia, 11 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, his second triple-double of the year, and that ties him for the most in the country. But he also became the first Yale player ever to have two triple-doubles in a season. He's one of the top assist men in the country. He ranks in the top 25 in assists at 5.8 per game. He leads the Ivy League in steals. I mean, you can make a case. And with Nick Townsend having the year he has, you have three first-team all-Ivy League players. Now, I don't know if Yale's going to get three on it, but you've got three elite players in the Ivy League, three of the top six players in the league in those three. And Bang is just doing it at both ends of the court. So Yale is just flexing its muscles. They're headed for a 20-win season. They're 18-6, 11-0 in conference play. If you didn't know this, they have the longest current winning streak in the country at 12 games in a row. Central Connecticut, oh, by the way, another tri-state team, is second in the country with High Point with 10 wins in a row. So you've got two teams with the longest winning streaks in the country right here in the tri-state. Yale has 12 wins in a row. Central Connecticut has 10. And both teams are you know, locking up or about to. Central Connecticut's about to lock up the NEC regular season title. Yale's got three games left at Dartmouth. Going to be tricky. Dartmouth is playing for that second seed, and they're trying to avoid that four seed. Then at Harvard, at Brown, three games on the road. Very, very tricky. And that last game against Brown, Brown could be playing for their Ivy League tournament lives. So Brown is going to have something to play for in that game. All right, I don't know if Yale's going to go undefeated and go 14-0. But if they do, they're going to have to earn it on the road in three tough environments in Dartmouth, Harvard, and Brown. So keep an eye on that. Princeton, meanwhile, is playing for its Ivy League tournament lives. We've said this before. They're in danger, all right? They're one game up on Brown with three games to go. So if Princeton doesn't make it, it'll only be the second time in the six-year history of the Ivy League madness, as they call it, that Princeton doesn't make it. The only team to make it all 6 years is Yale. So they need to get Caden Pierce right. I've said this before. There's something going on there. His ankle, something is not right. He's not 100%. He's not the same player. If he can get healthy and give them something, then Princeton has a fighting chance. But right now, they're just trying to get into the tournament. So they have work to do. All right, lastly, I want to talk about Quinnipiac. It looks like it's going to be either them or Marist in the MAC. And as the, you know, Merrimack is there as well. But as the gods would have it, the MAC schedulers, so to speak, lo and behold, you know, Quinnipiac and Marist, here they are tied atop the standings. And somehow, some way, they're both playing Merrimack in the next couple of weeks. Both teams have to play Merrimack. So Merrimack could have a say in who wins or loses the number one seed in the MAC conference. And they only played each other once this year, Quinnipiac and Marist. And the tiebreaker, if you're not aware of this, the tiebreaker goes to Marist. Marist won that game 69-62. So should they remain tied, Marist gets the number one overall seed. That's the only time they're going to meet this year. But Amari Monroe has been an absolute beast. And Quinnipiac had probably their best win of the season. Down 17 points on the road to John Gallagher's Manhattan team, who is going to be, you don't want to play Manhattan in the MAC conference tournament. But Quinnipiac, down by 17, stormed back in the second half and won that game 74-71. A huge comeback. For me, it was their best win of the season. They outscored Manhattan in the second half 51-33. Shot the lights out in the second half, and at the center of it all was Amari Monroe. He was the preseason MAC player of the year. He reached 1,000 points in this game, and he is looking like the clear favorite to win MAC player of the year. He's got 12 double-doubles this year. Eight of his last 10 games, he's had double-doubles. And in the two games he didn't have a double-double, he had 9 rebounds in both games. So he's 2 rebounds away from having 12 straight double-doubles. And in those 10 games, get this, he's averaging 23.5 points and 11.6 rebounds. He's 6'7", 220 pounds. And he's playing like he's 6'10". Pound for pound, the best player in the MAC. He's only a junior, and this dude is taking Quinnipiac to first place along with Marist. So he looks like he's going to win it. Maybe the only other guy that would challenge him for MAC Conference Player of the Year is Josh Pascarelli at Marist. Those are the two. But I think Monroe has him by a head. All right? He's been that good. So Quinnipiac still has 4 games remaining. They're 2 at home, St. Peter's and Mount St. Mary's, and they're at Merrimack and at Fairfield. All right? They have to hope that if they win all 4, that somehow, some way, Marist loses one, right? Because they can't be tied. So 4 games remaining, a lot to be told. 2 games this week, 2 games the following week. You know, Fairfield's tricky. It's their rival. It's on the road. Merrimack, not an easy place to win. So Quinnipiac, should they win all 4? 17-3. You know, let's even put them at put him at 3-1 in those last four, and this team is 16-4. But as you know, in this league, it doesn't matter. The regular season is all about, you know, positioning. You get to the postseason, it's a one-bid conference. You need to win it. All right. That'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My thanks to you, as always, for listening and downloading and sharing. I couldn't do it without you. A lot of fun on this one. A lot going on. There are so many teams in the Tri-State that are channeling towards getting a bid to March Madness and trending upward as well. My thanks to you. Until next time, my name is Brian Dean of Ellis. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.